Welcome to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show, a real estate investment program. Listen and learn how to use real estate to build wealth and passive income streams for you and your family. We bring you experts every day to discuss and answer your questions on everything from single-family homes all the way up to 600-plus unit apartment complexes. And now, the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show.
Welcome to the show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. On today's show, we're going to talk about how to own real estate. I mean, it sounds like it's pretty easy, right? But I will tell you, there are a lot of complicated things involved with real estate ownership. You have to understand how to hold title. You have to understand what type of entity you want to put your properties in. And we're going to explore that today, because today we're going to talk about how to own real estate. Now, I will tell you right out of the bat, there are various ways to hold that title to the property, and the laws vary state to state. So make sure you understand what the laws are in the state that you're operating in, or if you're operating in multiple states, make sure you understand all of those laws, okay? You know, the decision has many legal ramifications that can affect you and your heirs. So make sure you're seeking legal advice before making your decision on how to take title to properties. But what I'd like to do is give you some examples of what the most common ways titles are held. Now, this is not an all-inclusive list. I mean, there's going to be other ways to hold title that I'm not going to address, but I'm just going to talk about the basic ones so that you understand that there are different ways to own title to the property. Now, the simplest way to hold title is called sole ownership. Now, sole ownership means just that. It means that one person alone holds title to the property. And it's usually used by people who are single. But believe it or not, a married person can also choose sole ownership if his or her spouse is willing to sign a document renouncing any rights to the property. Now, that I think happens in Hollywood a lot, you know, where you've got somebody who's married to somebody else and they bring, you know, whatever they bring to the table, and they do those prenuptial agreements, and maybe they own property as sole ownership even though they're married, and they agree to all of that stuff. I will tell you, my wife won't have any of that stuff. I mean, if I went to my wife and I said, "Hey, honey, I would like to take title in a property as a sole owner," you know what she would do? She would look at me and ask me, "Well, what version of crazy am I today?" Because that doesn't work for her. And quite frankly, that doesn't work for our marriage. We actually hold title as joint tenancy with right of survivorship, which is another way to hold title to a property. And what that means is, two or more people can hold title to the property together. So if one of them dies, the ownership automatically defers to the remaining owners. So, you know, one of the things that we are considering doing with some of our single family investment properties is adding my son and my daughter to the title. And the reason for that is this: they're both adults of the age of 18 or older. They are legally able to hold title. And quite frankly, I think it's the best way for me to pass on those particular assets to my family. As long as they're on the title, if something happens to me, they're going to take over ownership to the property. So like I said, it's something we're considering. I am talking with my legal advisor. I'm talking with my CPA, and we're trying to figure out if that makes sense, if that's the way to do it. Okay. Now, another way to own property that allows multiple owners to own a percentage of the property is called tenancy in common. And in this form of holding title to the property, an owner can sell his or her percentage share of the property at any time. So owners also can will their share to their heirs. And the property does not revert to the other owners automatically in that instance if one of the owners dies. So, you know, this is one of those things where you've probably heard about fractional ownership. Fractional ownership is where a bunch of people get together and they buy a portion of a property that they couldn't afford to buy on their own. And in which case, what they would likely do is they would likely hold property, the rights to the property or title to the property in tenancy in common, because that would give them the ability to do something with that fractional share of ownership. Now, The problem with the tenancy in common thing, and this is where it gets a little murky, is that let's say you and I are holding property as tenancy in common, okay, and we both own an equal share. We both own 50% of the property. Now, you have the right to sell your share of the property at any time. So let's say you decide to sell to that guy over there, and that guy over there, he doesn't seem to know what he's doing with real estate, but you know what? You just sold your interest to that person. Now I've got to deal with that person. So, you know, it's something to consider when you are looking at how you're going to hold title. Tenancy in common gives you some advantages, but it also gives you some disadvantages. Now, here's another way you can own title to the property. It's called tenancy by the entirety. Okay, and that's a mouthful right there in its own right. But some states allow joint ownership of a property by a married couple called tenancy by the entirety. And in this type of ownership, an owner cannot make a decision about the property without the other's consent. Okay, so this takes some of the risk out of the tenancy in common. It's just a different way to do it. And as with joint tenancy with the right of survivorship, each of the married partners has full right to the property should the other one die. Okay, so that's just, you know, I don't know that there's a per se a benefit or a lack of benefit to using tenancy by the entirety. You know, it might be in states where joint tenancy with the right of survivorship is not available. I can't think of one of those states off the top of my head, but then again, I am not in the title business. So I would say, you know, the best thing to do, again, is to consult an attorney, or you can always talk to a title company in your local area, and they can give you information on how to own property. Now, another way you can own property is called community property. And in 9 states in the United States, property acquired while married is recognized as community property, with each of the partners owning half of the property. As with tenancy in common, each of the partners can will his or her half of the property to someone else unless the community property is owned with right of survivorship. So these are some different things that you need to consider when you're looking at, you know, buying residential income producing property. How are you going to hold the title? And I'll tell you, there are some other ways that we still haven't even gotten around to talking about, and we'll do that. We're going to talk about corporations in the next segment of the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. We'll be back right after this.
Lifestyles Unlimited is the real estate investor education and mentoring group that has been taking people by the hand and teaching them how to invest in real estate for 29 years. Our students have been so successful at creating wealth and passive income that they have won local, state, and national Investor of the Year awards 12 of the last 12 years. If you're ready to add real estate to your portfolio, go to lifestylesunlimitedpodcast.com to access our free live training event schedule.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. On today's show, we're talking about how to own real estate. That's right. We're giving you a one over the world of the different ways you can own title in properties. You know, the type of title that you choose is important, because each of them has their own specific components. They have their own legal elements. They have their own legal remedies, and making sure that you're informed and doing the right thing when it comes to titling your property is very important. It's not something you should just take on willy-nilly. You really need to consider the options and choose the best one for you. Now, I'll be the first one to tell you, I am not a competent attorney. I am not an attorney. I don't even play an attorney on TV. So when you're looking for advice on how to do these things, I would suggest a highly qualified and competent real estate attorney. I wouldn't use a criminal law attorney, because they don't understand real estate the way a real estate attorney does. So, you know, make sure you're using the right type of legal advice. Also, your CPA again, somebody who should be versed in real estate and not in some other modality is also an excellent source to advise you. And believe it or not, title companies, because they do this stuff day in and day out, they have a very good understanding of what the basic principles are for each of the different ways you can hold title, and they can help to educate you on that. Now, I will tell you, if you're a member of Lifestyles Unlimited, we've got a deep bench of vendors that cover all of this stuff. We've got title people, we've got real estate attorneys, we've got CPAs that specialize in real estate. Heck, we've got all the trades, we've got all the professions that you need. It's all in one nice, tight fitting bowed package. But I digress. Let's talk a little bit more about these different ways. Now, we talked about sole ownership. We talked about joint tenancy with right of survivorship. We talked about tenancy in common, and we talked about tenancy by the entirety, and we talked about community property, you know, those nine states that allow for community property. There's another one I didn't get to, and it's called a living trust. Did you know that property can be transferred into a living trust, which can reduce taxes on the estate in the event of an owner's death? That's right. A living trust is really a robust estate planning tool that lets you create a legal entity, in other words, a trust, that can then be used to own your property, and you can put other valuable assets in there. And then when you pass away, the trust will legally pass on your estate according to your wishes. And unlike a last will and testament, the property in a living trust is not usually subjected to the probate process. But the key thing here is you must transfer property into a living trust to take advantage of the trust benefits. Okay, so that's something you need to consider. You also have to consider that if you're putting property in a trust and titling in the name of the trust, do you have the ability to bring on additional property into that trust? Can you buy additional properties, or does that trust have to qualify for the mortgages? I know, something you got to think about, right? But I'll tell you, there is some cost to setting up and maintaining a trust, but again, a qualified estate attorney can assist in establishing a trust. Make sure you're working with a qualified attorney, the right kind of attorney, not the wrong kind. You don't want just a generic attorney messing around with this stuff. You want somebody that's written probably, a good number would be, several hundred, maybe even 1,000 different trusts. That is somebody that knows what they're doing. So let's switch gears just a little bit, and let's talk about corporations or partnerships. Now, I get questions about this all the time. You know, I get questions about, hey, Al, should I own my single family properties in a corporation? Or hey, Al, should I use an S corporation for my single family? I've already got one, so can I put that in there? Or hey, Al, what's the best way to hold, to set up an entity for multifamily? Okay, we're going to try and tackle some of those questions. Again, I am not an attorney. I don't play one on TV, so don't hold me accountable for anything. I do the research, and I give you the best information that I can find out there. And trust me, there's a lot of information out there that is just off the rails. I mean, and I don't mean in a good way. I mean, that information is just, it's stinking information. But that's the problem with the internet. And here, I'll just go on a rant about the internet for a moment. The problem I've got with the internet is there is great information out there, but the problem associated with the great information is all the bad information that goes along with it. And everybody has the ability to, basically mark their turf or state their opinion on a website or a blog or whatever it is. And the problem with that information, it's not always qualified. So what you're getting is opinions, but those opinions aren't necessarily backed in fact. So that's what I try and do for you, is I try and cull through all of that superfluous information that really isn't correct. And I give you the information that I believe is correct, but I want you to verify. You know, I'll tell you what, there's an old saying that goes, trust but verify. So when it comes to this type of information that I'm giving you, trust that it's correct, but go out and verify that I told you the right thing, because I don't want you to get yourself into a situation where you're going to have a problem. So let's talk about these corporations or partnerships. A corporation or a partnership can hold title to a property, and each has different rights and arrangements that affect the title. So again, I can't say it enough. Seek legal counsel in order to make an informed decision. And remember, how title is vested has important legal consequences. And according to an attorney by the name of Larry Villano, he says, owning real estate in a corporation's name is not a good idea from both a tax and a liability standpoint. Now, he makes a good argument, and we're going to cut through this right now because it's important that you understand this, because those of you that have these questions about owning, you know, property in corporations, I think Larry does a good job of explaining why it's a bad idea. Did you know that a regular C corporation is not considered a pass-through entity, meaning corporate taxable income is initially taxed at the entity level? In other words, the corporation pays the taxes. And if the corporation distributes its earnings to its shareholders as a dividend, the recipients of the dividend must include it in their individual income tax return, where it is subject to income taxes a second time at the personal level. So that's called double taxation. And that is a problem of using a C corporation to use as your mechanism to hold property. If an asset that appreciates in value is held inside a C corporation, and the asset is subsequently sold by the corporation at the higher value, the gain will be taxed at the corporate level of income tax rates. So that gain is going to be taxed. And then if the corporation subsequently distributes income to its shareholders, for example, as a dividend, the recipient will include the income in their individual tax return, where it will be subject to income taxes again a second time. So that is one of the problems with using a corporation. And when we come back from the break, I'll give you an example of the numbers, so that, you know, I'm not just giving you the English portion of it, I'm giving you the math portion of it. Hey, this is Al Gordon on the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. And if you'd like to send me an idea for a show or just a comment, you can do so at askal@luinc.com. That's askal@luinc.com. We'll be back right after this.
Get total freedom in your life, safely and quickly. Build wealth and passive income so you never worry about working until you drop, losing your job, or retiring in poverty. 29 years ago, Dell Walmsley founded Lifestyles Unlimited. Dell has taught over 100,000 people, just like me and you, the principles of financial freedom through his national radio shows and personal one-on-one mentoring at Lifestyles Unlimited. I'm excited to tell you about the real estate workshop that has changed so many lives. This workshop takes you inside what we do and what we believe. We'll share with you the five ways we make money in real estate and much more. Just like your personal trainer, the Lifestyles Unlimited team will motivate, encourage, and teach you so you can get in the best financial shape of your life. Call 866-971-8970 or go to lifestylesunlimitedpodcast.com. That's lifestylesunlimitedpodcast.com to register for the workshop that will change your life. That's lifestylesunlimitedpodcast.com.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. On today's show, we've got a simple topic. It's how to own real estate. Okay, it's not really that simple of a topic. It's got some complexity to it. There's a lot of things that you need to take into consideration. Are you going to take title in your own name? Are you going to take title with somebody else? Are you going to put title into a trust? Maybe you're going to put title into a corporation or a partnership, or maybe an S corporation, or, you know, there's all kinds of options out there. But what we're talking about now is we're talking about the corporation side of the house. Okay. And why way, owning real estate in a corporation's name may not be a good idea for you. And I'm quoting some information from an attorney by the name of Larry Villano. He put out some really good information, in my opinion, as to why owning property in a corporation is not a great idea, especially a C corporation. And really, it boils down to double taxation. You're going to get taxed at the corporate level, and then you're going to pass through the residuals, and then you're going to get taxed at the individual level. So, you know, it can be a problem. So here's an example of how that works. Okay. So you own a property in your C corporation. Okay. That C corporation sells the property and you realize a gain of, let's just say, $10,000. Okay. The corporation's income tax rate is 15%. So here's how that plays out. You're going to have that corporate income tax of $1,500. That's 15% of $10,000. All right. The C corporation pays you a dividend of $8,500. That's the gain of $10,000 minus the $1,500 in taxes the corporation had to pay. Now, let's just say your personal tax rate is also 15%. And your personal income tax on that is going to be $1,275, or 15% of the remaining $8,500. So in total tax, you will have paid $2,775. That's the $1,500 that the corporation pays and the $1,275 that you get to pay. You know, when you add all that together, that's an almost 28% tax rate based on the $10,000 gain. You know, that's taking the $2,775 dividing it by $10,000. That's how I got that 28%. Now, let's assume the same facts, except maybe you're organized as an LLC, which is considered a pass-through entity. Okay. And assume your personal tax income bracket is 15%. So let's take a look at it this way. Your tax is going to be $1,500, which is 15% of the $10,000 gain. That's it. The LLC entity is not subject to tax, excuse me, since it's considered a pass-through entity. Therefore, your tax rate is only 15%. Does that make sense? Here's the bottom line. You save $1,275 by being organized as an LLC rather than as a C corporation. And if the corporation was in a higher tax bracket than 15%, it would have paid taxes at that higher marginal tax rate. For individuals, however, dividends received from domestic corporations are taxed at the lower capital gains rate. Therefore, by being organized as an LLC, which again is a pass-through entity, if your tax bracket was higher than 15%, the dividend would have been taxed at the lower capital gains rate. Okay. Now let's talk a little bit about liability. If you own real estate inside a corporation and that corporation is sued, in other words, the property owned by the corporation could be lost. It's that simple. For example, if you own an apartment building and someone slips on the lobby floor of the clubhouse because your maintenance worker failed to mop up a spill from a broken bottle, the corporation could be sued. And if the corporation does not carry sufficient insurance to pay the claim, the judgment creditor may end up owning the corporate stock. And by controlling the stock, the creditor can sell the building. So if the claim was, say, for $2 million and your insurance only covered $1 million and your corporate-owned building is worth, let's say, $500,000, the building could end up being sold to satisfy the claim. Your personal assets would be protected since the lawsuit was against the corporation, but you lose the building, okay? That's another danger of being involved with a corporation. So what if you're a member of a multi-member LLC or a partnership, and one of the other members or partners gets sued personally and ends up with a judgment against him, making that member or partner a debtor, LLC member, or debtor partner? Are the non-debtor LLC members insulated from the judgment creditor? Are the LLC's assets at risk? Well, the idea behind what's called a charging order is to protect non-debtor LLC members in a multi-member LLC from claims against a debtor member and to protect the asset of the business entity so that it may continue to operate unimpeded. In other words, the collection effort of the judgment creditor are limited because of the charging order mechanism. A charging order only gives a judgment creditor the right to attach a debtor LLC member's interest in the LLC distributions and not the LLC's assets. I know that's some pretty deep attorney talk stuff there, but it's important to hear. And I'll tell you, he goes on to say this. This means the business's assets remain out of the reach of the creditor, allowing it to continue operating without distribution with its assets intact. A judgment creditor may not vote his charging interest or participate in the management of the business either. These restrictions preclude a judgment creditor from voting for an LLC distribution, which would allow the creditor to get his hands on some money. Now, partnership statutes and limited liability company statutes in most jurisdictions provide for charging orders. In some states, partnership and LLC statutes are based on what's called the Uniform Act, such as the Revised Uniform Partnership Act of 1994, the Uniform Limited Partnership Act of 2000, or the Uniform Limited Liability Act of 1996, or the earlier versions of these acts. Now, are you starting to see why I need you to go and consult with an attorney if you're going to do this stuff? You have to understand the legalese of all this stuff. I mean, I gave you a one over the world of the information, and some of you are sitting there looking at your radio dumbfounded, like, what did he just say? I mean, I thought he was going to talk about, you know, C corporations and whether they're a good way to invest money. And I think what I heard is they're not, but I'm not sure I understand all the rules. Yeah. I know that's because attorneys get involved and attorneys tend to muck it up, but attorneys also have a tendency to keep everything on the straight and narrow. So make sure you're working with a qualified attorney that can advise you on these types of things. Now let's switch gears to an S corporation. I get this question a lot. Can an S corporation buy residential property? And I'll tell you, that's a hard question for me to answer because, first of all, I've never owned an S corporation, so I've got no experience base. Second of all, I've never set one up, so I've again, no experience base. And third of all, I've never asked a qualified attorney or CPA or anybody on my team how to do it. Okay, so what I did was I turned to another attorney by the name of Tim Plain, and what he said is this. When it comes to S corporations buying residential property, he says it's common practice to set up an S corporation as a real estate investment vehicle. There's no rule or regulation to stop the purchase as an investment of residential property by an S corporation. And in fact, an S corporation is one of the types of business structures often considered for a business that will focus on real estate investing. If you already have an existing S corporation and you want to invest in residential real estate, that plan should work out. And if you're looking to set up a new business, maybe a limited liability structure might make more sense. And what we're going to do when we come back from the break, we're going to continue to explore this S corporation in comparison with the limited liability corporations. And if by any means you want to call in for any reason to talk about real estate, you can do so at 877-711-5211. That's 877-711-5211. Back after this.
What would happen if you didn't show up for work tomorrow? For the next couple of days? For a week? A couple of months? A year? How long until you lose everything you've worked for in a fraction of the time it took to earn it? If this fear keeps you up at night, it's time to learn the strategies we teach at Lifestyles Unlimited. Start with the free workshop. Go to lifestylesunlimitedpodcast.com and find your true financial peace, like so many of our members already have. That's lifestylesunlimitedpodcast.com.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. My name is Al Gordon, and as always, we're working on your financial freedom. So on today's show, we've been talking a little bit about, you know, how to, well, quite frankly, how do you own real estate? There's a lot of ways to do it. There's a lot of ways you can title the property to meet your goals and objectives. And quite frankly, you've got to understand what makes sense to you from your investing perspective. And of course, you get a lot of that advice from the members of your team. And in the case of what we're talking about today, you definitely need to have a qualified real estate attorney, possibly a qualified CPA, assisting you with setting up your entity structures and how you want to hold property and hold real estate. Now, we started talking a little bit about an S corporation, and the neat thing about an S corporation is this. Unlike a C corporation, an S corporation does not pay taxes at the corporate level. It's considered a pass-through entity. So any income earned and deductions are passed through to the shareholders to be included on the individual tax returns. So rental income from residential property owned by the S corp would pass to the shareholders as passive investment income. And LLC functions in the same manner. Okay, I mean they're very similar on how they treat that pass-through. Passing through the financial results to the owner, which are called members of an LLC. The benefit of using an S corp or LLC to own property is that they're treated as a separate entity that is responsible, as opposed to shareholders or members, for any liabilities that may arise from the real estate investment. Now, there's a little thing in S corporations called pass-through losses. Okay, so if the S corporation realizes a loss on real estate property, that loss would be passed through for a shareholder to use on a personal tax return. And for an S corp, the use of losses is limited. Now again, listen clearly. The use of losses is limited to the shareholder's proportionate investment in the property. So this may result in a limit on losses for the shareholder if the property was financed and the losses exceed the amount of invested equity or capital. And with an LLC, the full amount of losses, including finance losses, can be passed through to the members. So, I mean, that's kind of a pretty deep primer. I've got a bunch of attorneys' opinions in there, talking about the different ways you can hold title to the property, different ways you can own real estate. And again, I've got to step back and tell you, this is not a decision that you need to make willy-nilly. I will tell you that we hold our properties in different ways. Right now, our single family properties are owned in my wife's name and my name, as joint tenancy with right of survivorship. Should one of us pass away, the other one will take full ownership of the property. We are considering bringing our adult children in on the title. There's some things that have to be worked out there. For instance, we do have mortgages on the property, so we're going to have to talk to the mortgage lenders and see if they're okay with our adult children coming on the title. Then we're probably going to have to talk about whether or not they have any liability for the underlying loan. The answer is probably yes, because it's linked to the property. But you know, those lenders are risk adverse and they want to understand what it is that we're doing. You know, what are we up to? What is it we're trying to get over with? But we're not trying to get over. We're just trying to find the best way to manage our properties. Now, I will tell you, all of our multifamily investments, those are done in a different way. We don't hold those in our personal name. We actually set up a limited liability company, and that company is essentially our home office, and we use that company to make all of our investments in our passive deals. So in other words, when we have a lead investor that brings us a deal and we like that deal and we want to invest with that lead investor, and that lead investor determines that, yeah, they would like to have us in the deal, because it's got to be a two-way decision there. It's not, I just don't get to pick and choose what I want to get into. Well, I do, but I don't necessarily get to choose the fact that I'm the guy that gets picked to be in the deal. So that's where the networking comes in. But we invest as an LLC into other LLCs. You see, All of those syndicated deals, they're all put together in an LLC. They're all held in an LLC. And the reason they do that is so that all of the, everything passes through and there's no bottleneck or there's no shorting of losses or anything like that. To us, the LLC is the cleanest way to do this stuff. And it makes sense to us. And quite frankly, we got good advice and we followed that good advice. And so when we invest, and now this is where it gets kind of interesting. I'm just talking about the LLC investing in another LLC. So our LLC invests in the various apartment complexes that we're invested in. Okay. Now, the owners of the LLC are my wife and myself. Okay. Our articles of incorporation or formation or whatever those documents are called basically state that my wife and I are the sole owners of our LLC. And, I think I got 0.0001% more share than she did. And I can't remember why we did that. I think it was that some, so that one of us could have a controlling opinion or something. I don't remember the rationale, but as far as we're concerned, we own them 50-50. And we invest into those properties. Now, when those properties pay us, they pay directly into a checking account that is set up specifically for that LLC. There's nothing else that goes into that LLC than other than money that is used to invest or to invest in our investments. Does that make sense? And when it comes tax time, what happens is this. Those LLCs that we're invested in, they do all their financial analysis, and then they send me a K-1 that comes directly to my LLC. Now, my LLC can receive K-1s, okay, and it does very well. We received a bunch of those K-1s at tax time, and we filtered all of those through our LLC. Now, our LLC retains none of the profits, none of the losses, and none of the depreciation. It retains none of that. It all passed on to us, again, in the form of a K-1. So my wife got a K-1 and I got a K-1. And together we combine those K-1s and put those into our personal taxes. So that's just kind of a breakdown of the fundamentals of how all of that works. You know, one of the other things that I'd like to talk about is, you know, what about things like title errors or concerns with title or, you know, the fact that title may be clouded or, yeah, I mean, there's all these terms that they use to talk about the title. And this is important because when you're buying a property, you need to make sure the title is in order. Okay. Especially if you're going to use a hard money loan to acquire a property. And what you want to do is you want to make sure that there's title insurance on that property going into it, especially on the first transaction. Because if for some reason they discover an error in the title and you didn't get title insurance, you're going to be responsible for making corrections to those title errors because you basically took title of the property. You didn't make sure it was cleaned up. You didn't have any insurance in place to protect you in case something went wrong. And when that happens, you get to be the person that pays for that. So how do you avoid some of that stuff? Well, it's real simple. You get what's called a preliminary title report. So when you put your offer together and you and the seller agree to the price and terms and you've got an executed contract, you're going to put that property into escrow and you're going to use most places use escrow for title and escrow. Some places use lawyers. It doesn't matter. But the key there is this. You need to make sure you get that preliminary title report so that you can see if there's anything affecting that title that you're not aware of. And if there is anything affecting that title, it gives the seller an opportunity to clear those things up so that they can convey clear title to you. Now, the reason you're going to get that title insurance is just like I told you before, it is a hedge against stupidity. Did I say that? I did say that. What I meant was this: it's really not a hedge against stupidity. It's really a hedge against what you don't know. Okay, and you're protecting yourself and keeping yourself from being ignorant. That's really what I meant to say. So make sure you're doing the right things. Make sure you're taking the right advice from the right people. Make sure you've got the right people on your team, and all of this goes swimmingly well. Now, I will tell you, if you don't have a clue about what I'm talking about, that's not a problem, okay? We can educate you, and that's what we do at Lifestyles Unlimited. We spend our time educating our members so that our members understand all the facets of what they need to know with regards to residential income producing real estate. That's part of the map, folks. That's part of taking you from point A to point Z, and every point along the way is to make sure you are fully informed as we go along, because the last thing we want for you, and again, I tell you this on just about every show, the last thing we want for you is for you to have a bad experience. We don't want you to have doom and gloom. We don't want you to be that person that goes on the internet and says, real estate sucks. I lost all my money in real estate. I didn't know what I was doing. Well, we're going to teach you how to do it right. We're going to teach you how to go out and acquire properties. We're going to teach you how to renovate those properties. We're going to teach you how to use the right financial instruments to acquire and renovate those properties. We're going to teach you the right financial instruments to do long-term financing on those properties. We're going to give you access to a deep bench of vendors. And these vendors are going to provide you quality information and quality services for just about everything that you need with regards to your real estate business. We make it that easy, and it's all with one singular point in mind: your success. See, we want you to retire in 5 years or less. We want you to stop relying on 401ks, IRAs, and pensions for your retirement, because those are really nothing but glorified savings accounts, okay? And I don't have them. Well, I've got pensions, but at the end of the day, they're not footing the bill for my lifestyle. Lifestyles Unlimited's education has taught me how to foot my own bill. So I've got passive income coming in, doing the things that it needs to do to give me my quality of life and to put me in that category of what I consider retired. And you can do it too. All you've got to do is go to Lifestyles Unlimited, go to the free workshops or view workshops button when you get there, click on your state, get yourself registered, and see what the possibilities are for you. And remember, everything we do at Lifestyles Unlimited is not about the money, but it is all about creating that lifestyle.
Thanks for listening to the Lifestyles Unlimited Real Estate Investor Radio Show. Remember that this show is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as legal, investing, or tax advice. Results may vary. Always consult a professional before making any financial decisions. If you'd like to find out more about the mentoring available at Lifestyles Unlimited, please visit them online at lifestylesunlimited.com.